This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Threats in response to threats. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Wednesday, August 9. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Shortly after President Trump warned North Korea that it could be met with military fire and fury, the Kim regime responded by saying it was considering a missile strike on Guam.
With such a specific threat to U.S. territory from Pyongyang, what's being said in Guam? Hear how the governor of that tiny island is reacting.
Sad news from the entertainment world. Singer-songwriter Glenn Campbell, known for hits like Rhinestone Cowboy, has died after a public battle with Alzheimer's.
And on the job front, suddenly the gig economy is under pressure thanks to an improving employment picture.
There used to be a pretty clear, bright line between employees and independent contractors, gig workers, and the line is just getting fuzzier and fuzzier as gig type platforms or, you know, independent contractors, the companies that retain them, are continuing to sweeten the perks because flexible work is just becoming a bigger and bigger trend.
Wall Street Journal reporter Kelsey G on the changing tide for on-demand employers like Uber or Instacart. She's here in about 20 minutes. The Trump administration and the Kim regime in North Korea now appear to be this close to each other's faces in their recent staring contest. President Trump yesterday specifically warned North Korea against making any more threats to the U.S., saying the country, quote, will be met with fire and fury.
He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
It didn't take North Korea long to respond to that. Hours later, Pyongyang made its most specific threat against the U.S. yet, saying through its official media that it was considering firing missiles at Guam, a U.S. territory that's about 1,500 miles east of the Philippines in the Western Pacific. Mr. Trump's comments reflect concern about the progress North Korea has made in recent months on its nuclear weapons program, as well as its unwillingness to discuss it. His remarks may also be aimed at alarming the Chinese into enforcing new U.N. sanctions against North Korea. Well, it's not often the U.S. territory of Guam makes headlines, but it is today, given North Korea's ballistic missile threat, which also included a message about neutralizing U.S. military bases that are home to nuclear bombers and missiles. The U.S. Air Force has said that members of the 37th Expeditionary Bomb Squadron deployed to Guam from Ellsworth Air Force Base in South Dakota are ready to fight tonight from Guam. Meanwhile, Guam Governor Eddie Calvo released a video statement saying he had spoken to a U.S. military official in the region who confirmed there was no immediate threat to his island, home to 160,000 people.
I've reached out to the White House this morning. An attack or threat on Guam is a threat or attack on the United States. They have said that America will be defended.
The U.S., by the way, took the island from Spain in 1898 after the Spanish-American War. Guam, which is just 210 square miles, was invaded and occupied by the Japanese for 2.5 years during World War II and was recaptured by American forces in 1944. Let's get the latest now from Jonathan Chang, Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea. He's with us this morning. Jonathan, what are you hearing from your post?
Well, obviously here people are focused on both sides. We had Donald Trump say at his on his vacation that he doesn't want to see any more threats from North Korea. And then just a few hours later, you see some threats from North Korea. We've been careful not to read too much into the timing of it in that... there is a bit of a time lag sometimes with North Korea's statements, and it may not have been directly aimed at what he had said. They do make threats often. Mm-hmm. But what was striking was how specific this threat was with regards to Guam, which is home to a large U.S. military presence, and it's within reach of its missiles. Nobody doubts that. So it was very specific, and just the timing of it, whether it was coincidental or not, certainly it's got a lot of people thinking here that we have a war of words that is a little worrying.
So if a threat specifically to Guam, why not Seoul?
Well, the threat to Seoul has always been there. They haven't needed to develop long-range missiles to reach Seoul. We're so close that artillery alone, and they've got a lot of it amassed there on the other side of the border, that would be enough to do the trick. I think there is some confidence, you could even call it a hope here, that South Korea being, you know, a brother nation in a certain sense with North Korea. This is, you know, one people that were ethnically divided after the Korean War, that they wouldn't turn their weapons on South Korea. You know, perhaps they would in the U.S. It's some measure of comfort. Again, I don't know how realistic it is, but I think that is part of the sentiment here. And, you know, the escalating rhetoric that we've seen this year from North Korea and from their technology has been aimed at reaching the U.S. homeland or reaching Guam. And you could argue in some ways that it hasn't been so much directed at South Korea.
We're speaking with the Wall Street Journal's Jonathan Chang, bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea, talking about the latest developments and threats between North Korea and the U.S. You mentioned in your story that analysts who have looked at this footage of missile test launches don't agree about whether these devices have successfully re-entered the atmosphere without disintegrating. Can you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, one of the largest challenges that North Korea still faces with its long-range missiles, I mean, nobody is seriously questioning that they can get them far enough to reach the U.S. The question is whether or not when they exit the atmosphere, can they come back in? And, you know, there are a couple of things associated with that. One is, before you get there, you have to miniaturize a nuke. It can't be a big one. You got to fit it onto the head of a missile. And the second thing you need to do is you need to make sure that it can survive coming back in through the atmosphere, which puts a lot of stress, a lot of heat, a lot of pressure on anything that comes through. We see that with meteorites. We see that with all sorts of different things that come through. And it's not clear that North Korea can keep its nuclear warhead intact coming through the atmosphere. North Korea says that it's there, but this is one of those things that's very hard for us to be able to know. The distance is something that from afar you can look at the trajectory and make calculations, but whether or not it can actually make it through is something that's difficult to assess with much confidence.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Chang, Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. Glenn Campbell, whose songs like Southern Nights blazed a trail for country music artists, a crossover into pop, has died after a six-year battle with Alzheimer's. Mr. Campbell, also known for songs like Rhinestone Cowboy, was a six-time Grammy winner who had nine number one country albums, starting with Gentle on My Mind in 1967. Mr. Campbell was youngest of 12 kids born to a sharecropper in Delight, Arkansas, about 100 miles southwest of Little Rock. He went on to release more than 70 albums, including the double platinum Wichita Lineman, his first number one album on the U.S. pop charts.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road.
Mr. Campbell released a farewell album 2 months ago, by the way. Even appeared in a couple of movies, including True Grit with John Wayne in 1969 and Any Which Way You Can with Clint Eastwood in 1980. Glenn Campbell was 81. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, members of Congress in both parties are criticizing President Trump for threatening North Korea with fire and fury. Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona warns against threatening military action without having a plan. California Democratic Congressman Ted Lieu calls Trump's words a rhetorical grenade.
Their present statements are reckless. We don't need incendiary statements. What we need is calm and steady leadership.
The crisis with North Korea deepens with a breakthrough in that country's nuclear capability. Defense intelligence officials say the rogue regime appears to have built a miniaturized nuclear weapon that could fit inside one of its missiles. Overnight, Pyongyang announced it is carefully examining a plan to strike the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam with missiles. President Trump accepts the gravity of the opioid epidemic.
Nobody is safe from this epidemic that threatens young and old, rich and poor, urban and rural communities. Everybody is threatened.
But he's not ready to declare it a national emergency. Instead, he wants to beef up law enforcement and stronger border security instead of new treatment or social programs. New Hampshire is suing OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma, becoming the latest state to accuse the drug maker of engaging in deceptive marketing practices. The suit claims Purdue significantly downplayed OxyContin's risk of addiction and engaged in marketing practices that opened the floodgates to opioid use and abuse. While the FBI looks for clues into who threw a pipe bomb-like device into Minnesota's largest mosque last weekend, its neighbors are showing support. Imam Mohammed Omar.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of you have visited us, sent us flowers, cookies, and provided us donations.
Some 800 people gathered in solidarity at the Dar al-Farouk Mosque in Bloomington last evening. Scientists have christened the gigantic dinosaur whose fossilized remains were found on an Argentine farm in 2010. Patagotitan majorum was a vegetarian and as heavy as a Boeing 737. They say it's not just the biggest known dinosaur, but also the biggest known land animal ever, and its bones indicate it wasn't even full grown.
Yikes. Could be seen from space, perhaps?
It was a baby.
Could you say the name of that the genus or species again? Was it
Patagotitan majorum?
You're good. 23 minutes after the hour. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Get away and save up to 30% at participating Lexington and Red Lion Hotels when you book by September 4th. Book your hotel stay and save today. The gig economy is undergoing a shift. Uber, Instacart, DoorDash, and other companies are straining to attract and keep the short-term workers who give rides, shop for groceries, and deliver meals at the tap of an app. Wall Street Journal management reporter Kelsey G says amid low unemployment and fierce competition, startups have begun offering richer perks. Kelsey, seems like the gig economy was just getting started.
That's what it feels like. Well, some of these companies like Uber and Lyft and Instacart, they launched during a time in which there were a lot of free hours, a lot of folks who are looking to, you know, supplement their income either because they weren't working enough hours in their full-time job or because they were between jobs in 2010, 2011, sort of the post-recession years. The situation has changed quite a bit since then in terms of the job market, and there's just a lot more competition for those people's work, whether that's in the full-time labor market or, you know, even in the gig economy as more and more platforms have popped up.
All right, so explain kind of specifically what each one of these is doing. What's Uber offering to entice new workers to stay?
So there's really a suite of perks at this point. There are signing bonuses, which range in, depending on the market that the driver is considering signing up in, based on the basic supply and demand fundamentals of what they need in that market. It can range from, like, you know, a couple hundred dollars to sign up to be a new driver to $1,000 in some of their markets. But there's also, like, a tiered program that companies like Uber are offering now, so that if you drive a certain number of hours per week, you get access to all kinds of benefits, like discounts on oil changes and gas and other sort of transportation-related services to, you know, help with planning for retirement or healthcare perks at some of these companies.
We're speaking with Kelsey G, Wall Street Journal management reporter, about her piece entitled, "In a Job Market This Good, Who Needs to Work in the Gig gig economy. All right, who else is doing stuff like DoorDash? Incentives there too?
Yeah, there are. So some of these incentives look more like discounts or sort of the way that airlines historically have offered frequent flyer miles to incentivize customers to continue coming back to, you know, American versus United. They're doing a similar type arrangement for their workers now. DoorDash is offering free in this case, but at some point cheap rentals of motorized bicycles, which seem pretty fun to drive, but also they're faster, more convenient ways to do your delivery. So the drivers or the bikers in this case make more money.
Is this a trend that will continue? Or like, will some of these companies have to offer even greater perks if the job market kind of continues to look decent?
Yeah, it's a great question. And really, that's kind of a philosophical point that a lot of the investors and analysts that I talked to made. There used to be a pretty clear, bright line between employees and independent contractors, gig workers. And the line is just getting fuzzier and fuzzier as gig type platforms or, you know, independent contractors, that the companies that retain them are continuing to sweeten the perks because flexible work is just becoming a bigger and bigger trend.
Thanks, Kelsey. Wall Street Journal management reporter Kelsey G. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, August 9. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. North Korea threatens a missile attack on the U.S. territory of Guam. Singer-songwriter Glenn Campbell has died from Alzheimer's at 81. Six French soldiers today were struck by a vehicle in a Paris suburb. Driver fled the scene. Missouri nabs a suspected cop killer after 2 days on the run. Business, Disney is divorcing Netflix and will reportedly launch its own video streaming services, including one for ESPN, early next year. And the Patriots are the first NFL team to purchase their own planes. That story in about 20 minutes. What if the U.S. government could close out the war in Afghanistan with a victory while saving tens of billions of dollars? Jim Michaels at USA Today is reporting that the White House is actively considering a bold plan to turn over a big chunk of the U.S. war in Afghanistan to private contractors in an effort to turn the tide in a stalemated war. Jim, what are you hearing?
Yeah, well, so Eric Prince, who founded Blackwater as a former Navy SEAL, has come up with a plan that he's it's pitched to the White House, which basically involves using private contractors, former Special Forces soldiers and the like, to train Afghan forces. In addition to that, he's also built a proposal to staff a 90-aircraft private air force that would basically support the Afghan army. Now, so why is that important now? Well, you know, President Trump has been very frustrated over the course of the Afghan war, you know, going on now for 16 years, and the Pentagon itself describes it as stalemate. So there's a proposal in the Pentagon to increase the U.S. military force there by about several thousand. Currently, there's about 8,400 there now, or 8,400. Mm-hmm. So it comes at a very, time when the White House is really searching for a new strategy. And on top of that, President Trump is obviously business background, having experience in the government. So something like this is actually, if not appealing, certainly something that would be weighed seriously. And I think that's where we're at right now.
Is Eric Prince here talking about a path to victory here?
Well, he certainly says he is, yes. I mean, he says this has been going on for 16 years. The strategy has not, in effect, changed. And instead of going forward, we're going a little bit backward. And to some extent, that's true. Now, in fairness to the Defense Department and the Pentagon, President Obama did push for some fairly significant troop drawdowns in recent years that has led to some of the instability there now.
Sure.
And again, General Nicholson, who's the top commander in Afghanistan, recommended several thousand more troops for the effort there, which would sort of put them back to where they were in previous years.
We're speaking with Jim Michaels, military writer at USA Today. He's got an exclusive story entitled Trump White House Weighs Unprecedented Plan to Privatize Much of the War in Afghanistan. All right, so as you point out, the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, and the Defense Secretary, Jim Mattis, are not necessarily on board with this. What does that mean for the likelihood of Mr. Prince's plan going through?
Well, great question. Some weeks back, I would have said the likelihood is not very good. But the fact that this plan is still alive and being discussed leads me to believe that there's a chance, if not a good chance, that some or all of it may eventually be adapted. It's just hard to say right now. Steve Bannon, Trump's strategic advisor and an influential person in the White House, is at least, if not advocating for it, promoting it and asking the president to take a look at it and consider it. Mm. That makes a difference.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Michaels, military writer at USA Today. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories he'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, when you fall from grace, some fall harder than others. None seem to fall farther faster than Anthony Scaramucci, who spent 10 tumultuous days in July as White House Communications Director. In fact, Mr. Scaramucci heads up a dubious new list, the 50 least powerful people in the world, as compiled by the news site 24/7 Wall Street. And while Scaramucci did come in at number one, he did have some stiff competition from other political figures who have seen their stature take a tumble, such as New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and former FBI Director James Comey, landing in at number two and number three, respectively. The site says it made its selections by focusing on well-known individuals around the world who have recently experienced a precipitous loss in stature. And it's not all political figures who have taken a tumble and made the list. Mark Fields, the former CEO of Ford, came in at number four. Tiger Woods is number five. And Kendall Jenner was number six, largely due to the fallout from the widely criticized Pepsi ad she starred in this past April.
Okay, well, listen, Mark Fields, former Ford CEO,
yep.
Let's be honest, laughing all the way to the bank.
Right.
All right. Tiger Woods, no trouble paying the rent.
A lot of rich people on this list.
Yep. Kendall Jenner, no trouble paying the rent.
And let's not forget.
Tied to the Kardashians.
Right. And let's not forget Scaramucci, who was a super rich guy.
That's
and
right.
That was what he was known for before this.
That's right.
So everybody's, they're doing just fine.
Yeah. If I fall from grace like that, and I'm of that stature, I'm taking my millions and I'm opening up a bait shop on a beach somewhere. Good news for you.
Though I'm not sure this list was scientific in nature.
Right.
And this may come as no surprise to you, Gordon, but a man who tried and failed to walk into a bank and deposit a $1 million bill has been charged with drug possession.
What?
That's right. Sioux City police officers were called to a Northwest Bank branch last week to talk to a man who tried to deposit the bill into his account. The officers asked 33-year-old Dennis Strickland whether he had any more of the bills, and then a baggie fell out when he emptied his pockets. The baggie allegedly contained methamphetamine. The U.S. Treasury Department says it has never produced a $1 million bill.
Mm.
How'd you like to be on the end of that phone call? You know, the reporter calling up, but we just got to check. There is no $1 million bill in circulation.
Yeah.
The Treasury Department person, you know, haggard, you know, working a long shift is like, oh, come on, people.
Yeah.
We've got better things. We've got bigger fish to fry over here.
I always wonder if there's video of, like, this attempted transaction.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably the, you know, grainy security footage.
Yeah.
That's probably about it.
And did this guy, Mr. Strickland, did he discuss the strategy with others involved in the drug trade? Like, you know what, guys? I'm going to be right back.
Yeah.
I need some cash. I'm going to take this $1 million bill over to the bank.
And they're all waiting outside with, you know, kind of like, wow, I wonder if it's going to work.
Oh, because if you got that kind of cash, you want to share it.
Yeah,
you're
of course.
Buying lunch, you're handing out 20s or 100s.
A lot of disappointed folks that day.
That's a riot, I think.
Yeah.
I think that story's a riot.
Most likely.
Some disturbing stuff going on there. Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday. Well, here's what you need to know about Guam, the island suddenly at the center of North Korean missile threats. Guam is a small island country but plays a crucial strategic role in U.S. defense. It is also known for its tropical beaches. The strip of land in the western Pacific Ocean is roughly the size of Chicago and just 4 miles wide at its narrowest. It's about 2,200 miles southeast of North Korea. Hawaii is about 4,000 miles to the west. Other facts, the island was first visited by the Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan in 1521 while he was sailing for the King of Spain. Also, Guamanians, as they're known, get American citizenship by birth but do not pay income taxes or get to vote for U.S. president. And finally, good luck with those sand castles if you visit. Guam does not have sand. What you see on the beaches is coral. 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein calls President Trump's stark threat of fire and fury to North Korea bombastic. In an interview with KTAR Radio in Phoenix, Republican Senator John McCain said great leaders don't threaten foes unless they're ready to act.
I don't believe that President Reagan or President Eisenhower or other presidents that I've admired would have said the same thing. They might have done as much as we could, but not that kind of rhetoric. I'm not sure how it helps.
North Korea's state media now says Pyongyang is considering a plan to fire missiles at Guam, the U.S. territory in the Western Pacific. French police are searching for a driver and vehicle that slammed into soldiers guarding a Paris suburb today, injuring 6 of them before getting away. The incident in Levallois is the latest of several attacks targeting security forces in France guarding sites after a string of deadly attacks. A man charged with killing a Clinton, Missouri police officer during a traffic stop has been arrested. Sergeant Bill Lowe of Missouri Highway Patrol.
The city's been on edge. This county's been on edge, not knowing where this individual was. So, you know, this gives them essentially an ability to get back to some sense of normalcy.
39-year-old Ian McCarthy was taken into custody overnight in Henry County. A strong magnitude 6.5 earthquake shook a mountainous region in southwestern China near the Tibetan Plateau, killing 7 people and injuring 88 others, knocking out power and phone networks. The area is known for its waterfalls and rock formations. 5 of the dead were tourists. New statistics from the American Cancer Society show death rates from colon cancer have been increasing steadily among white people under age 54. Even after accounting for more colonoscopy screenings, the researchers say it all points to more occurrences of the disease itself, for reasons unknown. In 1968, he outsold the Beatles. Singer Glenn Campbell sold over 45 million records during a career that spanned 6 decades, blended country with pop music, and even included well-received film roles in a TV show. Campbell lost his battle with Alzheimer's disease at 81.
Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. The New England Patriots have set many aerial milestones with Tom Brady running their passing game right. They earned another by becoming the first NFL team to purchase their own airplane for team travel. As BleacherReport.com says, the only planes they previously owned were the New York Jets. But the defending Super Bowl champs now own a pair of 2 wide-body Boeing 767s, according to ESPN.com. Perhaps one for the team, one for the Lombardi trophies. ESPN estimated a cost of around $10 million for both planes. Charter costs, meanwhile, are expected to balloon to approximately $4 million for the 10-round trips, including preseason games, required per season. That does not account for any playoffs. The team could also cover some of the costs, by the way, by renting out the planes when not in use. Along with including first-class seating, ESPN said the team anticipates a boost in player recovery with help from a smart toilet that measures hydration levels. And by the way, in a nod to team owner Bob Kraft, the planes are called Aircraft with a K. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa K, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.